This is DW News live from Berlin. Tonight, Europe confronting crises at its border and at its very core. At a summit in Brussels, EU leaders are tackling weaponized migration, higher energy prices, and a challenge from Poland over fundamental laws. This is Germany's outgoing Chancellor Angela Merkel, her last summit. She still has lots to do. Also coming up tonight, rival demonstrations in Sudan, supporters of a civilian government worried that the military will abort the transition to democracy. And India hitting a COVID-19 milestone, 1 billion vaccinations, but with people, most people still not fully vaccinated, the upcoming festival season could be dangerous. I'm Brent Goff. It's good to have you with us. Today, European Union leaders have been meeting in Brussels in an attempt to contain a series of looming, growing crises. Rising energy prices, migrants crossing from Belarus, and a dispute over national versus EU law. The meeting is supposed to be one of the last for outgoing German Chancellor Angela Merkel. But with key disputes still unresolved, her job is far from finished.
She has walked this walk more than 100 times. For Angela Merkel, this is likely to be the last EU summit of her career. But it doesn't seem like the right time to celebrate just yet.
Rule of law is one of the fundamentals of the European Union. But we have to find ways and possibilities to come together on this. Because the cascade of legal disputes before the European Court of Justice cannot answer the problem of how to actually practice rule of law.
The recent developments in Poland are a headache for EU leaders. Rule of law is not an easy issue. Thousands took to the streets of Poland after a top court there ruled that domestic law can take precedence over EU law. On Tuesday, Polish Prime Minister Mateusz Morawiecki and EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen had a heated exchange over the issue in the European Parliament.
We cannot and we will not allow our common values to be put at risk. The Commission will act, and the options are all known.
I am speaking in this debate in order to present to you the factual subject of the dispute. And not to continue spreading tales for political reasons about Polexit or lies on the subject of a rollback of the rule of law. The recent developments in Poland are of concern to many, not, however, to the Hungarian Prime Minister.
Poland is a good country, one of the best European countries. They are doing very well. It's a success country. The best economy, democracy is prevailing, you know, elections are fair. What's the problem with Poland?
Most other EU leaders beg to differ, but nobody here is looking for direct confrontation. They hope Angela Merkel will fix things. And she's already met up with the Polish Prime Minister for a fireside chat. Even after over 100 summits, for the outgoing German Chancellor, it's not an easy job.
Well, earlier we spoke with our European affairs correspondent, Barbara Vezo, and we asked her where things stand among leaders over Poland's refusal to recognize the supremacy of EU law.
It's up for debate, Brent, because the Polish government and one of the leading actors, Jarosław Kaczyński, was then, when Poland joined the European Union, also in the driving seat. So either he has a very short memory or... As we all assume, Poland has changed its mind. The government is just steering away from the common rule book of the European Union, and it's doing so in a quite belligerent manner, because when Mateusz Morawiecki arrived at the summit here, he said, we will not be blackmailed, we will not give in, the EU is sort of exceeding their competences. And so it sounded quite combative. And then only at the very end, he said, yeah, we can somehow enter into a dialogue about this. But what is there to dialogue about if somebody doesn't want to accept the common rules anymore? And that he got help from Hungary's Viktor Orbán only shows that the two most developed sort of semi-autocracies in the European Union seem to smell the air and think this is the time to sort of have a little power grab and try to push back the European Union and its rulebook.
Ms. Barbara Vasil there reporting from Brussels. Here's a look now at some of the other stories that are making headlines around the world. Russian journalist Dmitry Muratov has been congratulated by Russian President Vladimir Putin for winning the Nobel Peace Prize. Muratov received the joint award last week for his investigative journalism with the Novaya Gazeta newspaper. It's a Kremlin-critical, independent newspaper. He dedicated the award to six of his staff members who were killed while working for the paper. A 25-year-old man has been charged with the murder of conservative UK lawmaker David Imus. It happened last week. Prosecutors say they plan to argue that Ali Harbi Ali had, quote, religious and ideological motivations when he stabbed Imus near London. Imus was killed while meeting constituents inside a church. Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has hinted that he may expel the ambassadors of 10 countries, including the U.S., Germany and France. Now, that's following their call for the release of philanthropist and activist Osman Kavala. Kavala has been in prison without a conviction since 2017. Rival demonstrations across Sudan today as tensions rise over worries about the transition to democracy. Thousands of people marched in the capital, Khartoum, to support a civilian-led government and to reject military rule. But groups supporting the military, they were also on the streets. Fears are rising that the military will renege on a power-sharing agreement that followed the removal of longtime ruler Omar al-Bashir in 2019.
Demonstrators in the capital, rallying to support democracy. In a rejection of military rule, their banners read, "Civilian rule is the people's choice." I am protesting because I want the military to hand over power to the civilians. Their time is over. They've been given their chance. And now we want a purely civilian rule. Support for Sudan's transitional government is fracturing. Many back a continued move to civilian rule, fragile though it may be. But others now want to return to military rule. This anti-government sit-in, led by Islamist pro-military rule supporters, has been going on for days. They are demanding the dissolution of the transitional government. We are sitting here until the Prime Minister finds us a solution. Either he leaves or his cabinet leaves. We're staying, and just like we removed 30 years of rule, we'll remove 2 years of rule. The military has shared power with civilians since it ousted authoritarian President Omar al-Bashir in 2019. The generals say they are committed to transitioning to democratic elections by the end of 2023, as well as supporting a civilian cabinet led by Prime Minister Abdalla Hamdok. He's led the cabinet under a sharing agreement since 2019. So far, the protests on both sides have remained largely peaceful, but fears are rising of a deepening divide in the country.
And we want to go now to Khartoum. I'm joined by Khalid Hare. She's the managing partner at Insight Strategy Partners. That's a think tank in Khartoum. Khalid, it's good to have you on the program. We're looking at rival mass rallies in Khartoum. Now, in terms of numbers and public support, are these two relatively equal groups?
No, not at all. The protests that we saw on the 16th of October, which is a few days ago on Saturday, were much, much smaller. The groups were much more homogenous. We heard that they were, some of them at least, were paid to be there or otherwise incentivized to be there to prop up and back up the Islamist groups that want to have a return to military rule. By contrast, today's protests saw many, many more people. I wouldn't be surprised if it's four people, a million or more. Certainly in the streets of Khartoum, you couldn't see from one end of the street to the other without seeing people. I mean, there are several videos circulating as well online that show just the extent to which people were out in force. And of course, this makes total sense. We're only 2 years into the transition period, and people have felt that the civilian government has not been given a chance. Despite the challenges that the civilian government has had, people are very aware that military groups and business groups, as well as those who are loyal to the former President Bashir, are very much out to scupper and stifle whatever progress has been made.
Yeah, we're looking at images from these rallies, and they look relatively peaceful. How concerned are you, though, that the threat of confrontation can become more than just a threat?
Well, I mean, there was a lot of concern beforehand for two reasons. One, the October 16th protesters, the Islamists, are still there, some of them, not very many, but they are camped out. And they were sort of very amped in terms of their energy. And certainly so were the protesters of today. But today's protesters follow very much the ethos of the 2018 revolution, which is, you know, peaceful demonstrations towards civilian rule. The second reason we were afraid that potentially something would happen is because, you know, in the 2018-2019 protests, we saw a violent pushback from the military. What we've seen today is a much, much smaller version of that. 35 people or so, according to the Khartoum Ministry of Health, have been injured due to, you know, the tear gas canisters and the like, which is a much smaller number, particularly compared to the crowds than we've seen before. This indicates to some extent that the military is getting the hint that their ploys so far, with both the October 16th protests and their machinations in manipulating and orchestrating divisions within the civilian camp, have largely failed. The question is, what now for the military? You know, this is what democracy looks like. There's people out on the streets demanding change. But it has put them on the back foot.
Khaled Hare joining us tonight from Khartoum with the latest. Khaled, we appreciate your time and your insights tonight. Thank you. India has administered 1 billion COVID-19 vaccine doses. About three quarters of adults there have now had at least one shot. However, hundreds of millions of Indians, especially younger people, are still unvaccinated. And with many major festivals scheduled in the country in the coming weeks, there's concerns about another super spreader event.
The drums are out after a long time as Indians celebrate the 1 billionth COVID-19 jab in the country.
Well, it's a milestone, and certainly a few months ago, it didn't seem as though we might reach there when vaccination rates were flagging. So I think it's important to note that at least 75% of the adult population of India has some level of protection, either being through being fully vaccinated or partially vaccinated.
In the capital, Delhi, Prime Minister Narendra Modi congratulated the nation. The WHO has also lauded the country and said that everyone deserves credit for making the vaccination drive a success.
The extraordinary feat in a short span was not possible without strong political leadership, intersectoral convergence, dedicated efforts of the entire health and frontline workforce, and the people themselves.
Just a few months back, hospitals were overwhelmed by the deadly second wave. Infections and deaths raged through cities and villages alike. But the fast vaccination drive has helped many people return to at least some semblance of a normal life. Corona had fully shaken us up, both financially and mentally. There were only problems, problems, and more problems. Just sitting at home, I also went through depression, and finances were down as well. But slowly things are getting back to normal. There is a huge difference now thanks to the vaccines. It will take another billion doses to fully vaccinate every Indian. But the country's younger people are still banned from the vaccination drive. Hundreds of millions under the age of 18 have not had a single shot. With the start of another festive season, they will be among the most vulnerable if another wave strikes.
And finally, the size and age of what is left of him, well, they're both big. Big John is the largest ever triceratops to be discovered. It's estimated that Big John is 66 million years old. The dinosaur's perfectly preserved skeleton was discovered in South Dakota several years ago. It sold this week at auction in Paris to a private, anonymous U.S. collector. You're watching DW News. Up next, DW Business News with Stephen Beardsley. He's much younger.